White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 358. Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, you summed it up very well here in our outline. Well, what the happened in Starkville? And, you know, well, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the bigger picture, I think, and some specifics as well. And we're going to look ahead to Tennessee. We may have a special guest to talk about Tennessee tonight, or we may do that as a separate show. We'll determine that in post-production. But the thing that just jumps out to me, number one, is I really thought this was going to be the year that we broke that streak of if there's high expectations, we fall on our face. I really thought this team was fall on your face proof. And dang, but they haven't proved me wrong. And so I want to get your impressions up front about that. And also, I mean, you know, we and you and I are not immune to this, but the Auburn family in general, when things suddenly go well, we immediately jump on the, oh, here come the playoffs, baby, you know, 11-1. And then when things, as soon as something goes bad, we jump on the, oh, 6-6, we're going to be lucky to get the Birmingham Bowl, you know. We kind of go to extremes that way, as Billy Joel might say. And are we jumping on the, what's the opposite of the bandwagon, the death wagon? Auburn has a vehicle called the death wagon that we jump on around this time every other year. And what I want to know is, are we being premature to jump on the death wagon? I think I've got my episode title already. Are we being premature to jump on the death wagon already when we consider we still play Tennessee, we still play Ole Miss, we still play Liberty? So even if we lose to the three teams that seem pretty formidable, you know, we're still looking at a winning season. Now, I know we wanted more than a winning season. I understand all that. I'm not addressing, you know, right this moment. I'm not saying, oh, it's okay, we'll be 7-5. I'm saying, should we be in terror that we're going to have a losing season, or have we jumped on the death wagon with both feet and both hands too prematurely?
Well, I think a lot of Auburn fans only have two settings, like you're saying, the national championship expectations, or, you know, we're going to be the worst team in the league. Like, and they're going one. They can only go one of those two directions. They can't go, you know, we're pretty good, we're okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to go 9-3, 8-4, go to a decent bowl game. But like, those are the only two ways their arrows point. You know what I'm saying?
I think that's because of Alabama in part. I think it's because we see Alabama doing so well. Our measure of success is absolute dominance like them or utter failure.
Yes. And I get that. I understand the psychology of the Alabama thing. I think some fans went on the death bus or whatever earlier.
Death bus, even better.
Death wagon. You know, earlier than we needed to this season. It's fair to do that given how formidable Georgia and Alabama look.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's not just about how we play. It's about how we are playing versus how our rivals are playing, knowing that we have to play them, especially away from home this year. So I think if we were playing well, you know, it matters a lot less how they're playing. But when we're playing poorly, we look over and they're playing great, then it's tough. Mm-hmm. So I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, I think the problem with the Alabama thing and the you know, the national championship or nothing view of the sport is, hey, college football's fun. It's supposed to be fun. And I know, like, it's hard when you're Auburn fan sometimes. This roller coaster, like you were saying, the expectations come back and bite us in the butt all the time and all that. But, you know, we do this because we love Auburn and we love college football, but also because college football is supposed to be fun. We're supposed to enjoy it. And it's not always enjoyable.
No.
You know, we did this podcast in 2012.
We did. Started our first season.
And that was a tough one. But, you know, I think Auburn is not as bad as, you know, everybody thinks it is after losing last week. But it's clearly not going to make the playoff or win the West or, you know, go to a New Year's Day bowl game like we have the last couple of years. So I think it's worth talking about why, you know, we are where we are, I think.
Yeah, it is supposed to be fun, and I've always said our greatest accomplishment in podcasting was doing a second season because we did 2012 because we had no idea what 2013 was going to be. But yeah, I mean that's, you know,
listen, and if you thought this episode was going to be depressing, you go back and listen to one of those, man.
Oh gosh, yeah, I mean no, our job is to celebrate the good times, but our job is also in part to rationalize through the bad times and try to look at the big picture and try to make sense of it all. I mean, it's not good, but the sky isn't falling. The sun came up and all that. And I mean, and I've always said too that I'm glad that we bounced back and forth over the years between doing our shows on Sunday and Monday. But the last few years, particularly, I've been glad we do them on Monday because it gives you kind of a Sunday to kind of get perspective. You know?
Yes.
We need that.
It's very, very important.
Yeah. If we did this show on like 11 o'clock p.m. Saturday night, it would be a very different show.
Yes. Especially if there's been some alcohol involved. So.
Yeah. There would be the explicit warning next to our next to us on mm-hmm. iTunes, a little E. Well, let's talk a little bit about it. And we can kind of roll on into the full review of the game. But up front, what was the main? I mean, if there's one thing you could change, now I know that there's a whole lot of people out there, and of course they come out every time things, you know, don't look great. But there's a whole lot of people say if there's one thing they could change, it would be Gus. And we've been down that road a million times, and if circumstances eventually lead us to that point, then it'll happen. You don't think Alan Green won't do something? I he looks to me anything but a complacent manager. He looks to me like somebody who is willing to take action. You know what I mean? So I'm not worried on that score. If the powers that be determine something needs to be done, but it'll probably be done. It's just very unlikely it'll happen anytime soon for reasons that we all know. But, I mean, other than that, if there's one thing from this particular game or the team right now that you feel like needs to be changed or is the main contributor, is it just the offensive line? Because I want to tell you, Calvin Ashley looked like he didn't know what sport he was playing half the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it?
I think the biggest problem with this team right now is red zone offense. And I think a lot of that is I know people who want to hear this. They want to shoot Gus and Chip Lindsey into the sun or whatever. But a lot of it is execution where, like you were saying, guys miss blocks, guys run the wrong way, guys are open instead of misses them with the pass. Receivers run to the wrong place. I think the right this minute, the one of the problems of this team is everybody's pressing. Like, everybody knows the offense isn't clicking, so everybody on the team, not just the offense, feels like they have to do more. And when you do that, you get into this, you know, mentality of I got to do more than my responsibility, and then you screw up your responsibility. And additionally, on the offense, I think it's, again, so many times one guy, the play is a good play design and a good play call, and it would work, and one guy screws up. And I think we could go through this entire game kind of play by play. And I'm going to tell you, I watched this game again yesterday.
I'm sorry.
But I needed to understand, like, the first half offense was so bad. Mm-hmm. I needed to understand why. But the red zone offense is a thing to me. Let me surprise you with something here, okay?
Okay.
We are basically tied for second in the SEC with the most trips in the red zone of any team behind Alabama, okay?
Wow. You're right. Yeah. I'm surprised.
You're shocked. Yeah. But we are 12th in the percentage of time when we get in the red zone where we score a TD, and we're hanging by our fingernails ahead of Vanderbilt and Arkansas for 14th in that category, okay?
Wow.
So what we get, this is a between the 20s kind of offense. We're not terrible. We're getting by. But we get down there and we can't score. And I think here's an example. In the second half of that game tonight, this is from Josh Vitale. In the second half last night, we ran 9 plays in the red zone. 1 rush for no gain, 7 incomplete passes, and 1 sack for loss of 11.
Wow.
So we had a lot of and we had a lot of scoring opportunities in this game that we did not capitalize on. A lot of scoring opportunities.
Yes.
And when we did capitalize, all we got were field goal attempts. So that to me is the one thing that is the absolute, it is destroying this team, is the red zone offense to me. And I think that goes back to the offensive line, and it goes back to the running game, because you'd like to be able to run the ball in more. It's very hard to pass the ball down there. And we solved this problem last year with Kerryon. He Kerryon in the Wildcat a lot, Kerryon carrying the ball in, and we don't have that right now. So
yeah, that's it. I didn't realize I knew we were struggling in the red zone. I didn't realize getting down there we were doing as well as we are, but this is not the first time that we've had this problem. I mean, how many times in the past have we said, well, you know, Auburn's problem is red zone offense? It seems like that's been a problem for forever with this particular staff and everything. They've always struggled in the years that we're really good are the years, obviously, that when we had Cam, he could, you know, or Trey Mason. The years that we have a difference maker on offense who regularly touches the ball, we've got receivers that are difference makers, but they don't regularly touch the ball. And the players that currently are regularly touching the ball are the ones that are struggling. You know, Whitlow is hurt. He still had 88 yards on 8 carries, which is amazing. But Stidham was 19 for 38 for 214 yards. And our third down efficiency was 3 out of 14, and 1 out of 3 on fourth down. And our rushing total for the game was 90 yards, which is just 2 more than Whitlow had by himself.
Yep.
Which means that if you take all of Whitlow's yards, 88, 8 carries, that means that we had, out of 21 rushing attempts, that means that we had 13 other carries that netted 2 yards.
Yep. And it's time to talk about Cam Martin.
Have you talked to your doctor about Cam Martin?
I'm sure that Cam Martin is a wonderful human being, good young man who does what he's supposed to do.
Don't like when it starts that way.
I'm sure he is. And I know the coaches like him. okay? But this is not elementary school. You do not get a sticker for, you know, showing up and trying hard. He is ineffective. And we continue to play him when he is ineffective, and I don't understand it.
Four carries for minus 2 yards.
And I'm going to throw it out there and say some of it is, I think some of it is honestly confidence in him. But some of it is the guys around him. There was a play, one of the biggest plays in the game, and nobody remembers this, is early in the game, Denson made an interception. We got the ball. We drove down to their end of the field. Cam Martin was still, we hadn't brought in Whitlow yet to this point. Cam Martin was the running back, and we had third down and one at about their 25-yard line, okay?
Yep.
And we ran the power to the left. We had Tucker Brown over there and Chandler Cox over there, and Cam Martin gets stuffed. But Cam Martin got stuffed because Chandler Cox absolutely whiffed on the linebacker. Like, the linebacker did a little away kind of thing, and Chandler Cox ran right by him. And that linebacker hit Cam Martin in the backfield and took him down. And that was why the play failed. Not because Cam Martin, wasn't in the right place or doing the right thing or wasn't big enough or whatever. It was because Chandler Cox, one guy on that play, missed his block. If Chandler Cox makes his block, Cam Martin gets 6 or 7 yards on that play. Mm. So... And because that play failed, because of the previous games, there was no chance Gus was going to go for it on 4th and 1 in their territory again. Like, he's touched the stove too many times.
Yeah.
He's not doing that. And so that was a huge play. I think it was, maybe it was 3-0 at that point in the game.
Mm-hmm.
There was no reason, we should not have gotten 1 yard on that and gotten the first down. So I think that was a big opportunity early in the game. And there was the biggest thing in this game was, people want to shoot Gus and shoot Chip and all that stuff, but there was missed opportunities that where the play design was okay and the players, one player or a different player here and there screwed it up. And I mean, the reverse pass to Slayton, was a gigantic turning point of the game. Whitlow's fumble at the goal line. I think he scored.
I think he scored too. I think we were down 14 from what we should have been because they gave them a touchdown and took one away from us.
100%. I do not think that their quarterback got in the end zone, and I do think that Whitlow crossed the goal line, but
that's how it goes.
The replay officials were against us that night, and that's a 14-point swing. That's not a small thing.
No.
And it's not a small thing, not just on the scoreboard, but psychologically. This team, I think, is struggling with confidence. And when you feel like everything's going against you like that, when you make the play and you do the right thing, and then they're like, no. So Whitlow's drop on the screen pass late in the game when it was a third down, we really needed it, and he was in a good position. Mm. And then Stidham had a couple of bad passes. I mean, not just the reverse pass, but there was a pass, where we ran Schwartz deep, and there was two guys back there, but he could have led Schwartz more toward the center of the field, and I think he easily would have caught it for a touchdown.
What's up with Stidham? What's the deal?
He is not nearly as accurate as he was last year.
No, we've been seeing it all year.
And I don't know if – I think some of it is, I don't know, like lingering effects from, injury. And then last year when he came in after the transfer, he spent a lot of time with the Auburn receivers and players, working on timing. And this year he spent a lot of time doing other stuff, like other QB camps and stuff. And it raised his national profile a lot, but he's not in the same sync with Slayton, those guys that he was last year. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is I think, honestly, he's scared of getting hit. Like, I'm not imputing his character or anything. I think with this offensive line, any rational human being mm-hmm. would be scared of getting hit.
Yeah.
But I think he sees the contact coming. Like on that pass to Schwartz I'm talking about, there was a linebacker or safety coming on a delayed blitz through a hole, and Stidham could see him coming, and he rushed that throw to Schwartz instead of standing in there a second and doing it right. And the same thing on the reverse pass. He could have taken a little, one more second and just kind of laid it out there for Slayton, and I think he rushed it because there are a lot of guys in the backfield here. And I think it's really affecting him. I think the, you know, we talked a lot about like confidence. You have to be confident in the game plan. You have to be confident in the guys around you. And when he's not confident in the offensive line, you know, it affects his timing. Mm-hmm. And also, I think it's like I talked about earlier. I think he's pressing. I think a lot of these guys are like, I got to make a huge play every time. And then when the game is on, they're trying too hard and they screw it up.
Is he turning into Terry Dean circa 1993-94? You know, Dean was a Heisman candidate, supposed to be so accurate, and he comes, you know, loses those two games to us and was never seen again.
You know what? We have to have a long talk at some point about Jared Stidham, because there was an assumption going into this season that he was going to be great this year, leave early, and go to the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen anything on this year's tape that makes me think he's an NFL player.
No.
NFL quarterbacks have to have a high degree of accuracy. Mm-hmm. It's not just about the size and the arm strength and stuff. And we haven't seen that from him this year.
When people say Gus has ruined another quarterback, what do you say to that?
Well, I mean, I think when you can't run the ball consistently and the offensive line is bad, it's one thing. I mean, I think Stidham is the same guy who was really good at the end of, you know, at the end of last season. But I think some of it is him. I think it's all on him. You could put it on Gus and them, but that's fair. I mean, part of the part you could put on Gus and them is they have to give him some easier throws. Like, besides the screen pass behind the line of scrimmage, okay? Mm-hmm. There are easier throws in the, you know, 5 to 10 yard range that we could do, that he could throw, where our receivers could make the run the route, and we could get yardage out of that. And I think one of the things that happened in the game, we talked last week about what do you want the offense to be, and I think especially in the second half, they went more towards your view of it. Like, I think they went to Stidham plays better when we're going fast, so we're going to go fast. And I think they went, you know, faster on offense, and I think that contributed to the giant time of possession imbalance in the game. But also, I think they felt like that was what was working, and the offense had like 225 yards in the second half. So, I mean, you know, if you're on the road doing that in a half of SEC football, that's pretty good. You know, I mean, as a yardage total, but again, it comes down to what are you doing at the end of those drives?
Well, that is why I feel like it's not as bad as it seems. I mean, we have these games where everything that can go wrong does go wrong, and we have them every year. And so I totally acknowledge that we have serious, serious issues. We've just been talking about them. But on the other hand, it's never quite as bad as it seems in a game like this. I mean, we could turn around and play Tennessee on Saturday and, you know, Stidham connects on that wide open pass to Slayton. And, you know, they don't say, you know, Whitlow doesn't drop the ball after he crosses the goal line, giving them the chance to take the touchdown away. And they do rule the quarterback is down on fourth down, you know. So basically we said that in the loss to LSU, 15 things had to go wrong, and they did. And I stand by that. And I think in this kind of a game, this kind of a game was like flipping a coin 20 times, and you call heads every time, and it comes up tails 15 times. You know, I mean, I'm not saying we were unlucky, but I'm saying basically every time that it could go our way or go against us, it pretty much went against us almost.
100% right. You're on that.
Yeah. Yes. And so if we go out and play again, if we went out and play this game again, I give us a 50-50 chance of winning. And I don't just mean because we've learned something from it. I mean, if we erase this game from everybody's memory and from reality and played it again, I think there's a 50-50 chance that the coin comes up heads 15 times. We do get the touchdown. They don't get the touchdown. We do complete the pass. We do make the block, you know. So,
well, that's the thing. Like, we don't even need the coin to come up heads 15 times. We just need to come up heads like twice out of 15.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
The plays I've already talked about, but all the other plays, like the blocked punt was a gigantic play. But one of the biggest things that happened in that game is Daniel Thomas got tackled on the return. Like there was a moment when I thought he was going to score, and I think we needed him to score.
Oh yeah. Play. As soon as he got tackled, I said, I wonder how many yards we're going to lose before we miss the field goal. That was my immediate response. I said, I wonder how many yards now we're going to lose before we miss the field goal. Because you needed him to get it in the end zone. And that goes back to the red zone offense. Or just closing in on the red zone offense probably really isn't great. But it's like the closer we get to it, the more. And we've talked before in the past many times about that there are plays that work in the middle of the field that don't really work when you get down close to the end zone. But but even still, I mean, you know, it is time where you need like a Kerryon Johnson or you need a dual threat quarterback. I'm not one of these who says that our offense only works with a dual threat quarterback, but I do think that in the red zone that helps a lot, having that option.
You're right, and it's interesting. We joked earlier in the season about Stidham running too much. He hasn't run the ball at all the last couple of games.
No.
I mean, zero. And he needs to run one or two times per game I'm not a conspiracy theorist person or whatever, but the fact that they're not running him combined with the fact that he's really nervous about getting hit, maybe he's hurt again.
I was wondering that too, yeah.
Like his accuracy is really bad. He's scared about getting hurt and they aren't running him at all.
Yep. Yeah. Still getting sacked though. That can't help.
He is, but I think like so many times if he just kept the ball, there's an easy 5 or 6 yards there sometimes that we need to just take. So, I don't know.
Well, let's look at the defense right quick. I mean, they played well enough, you know, and for the whole game, and they played well enough for several quarters. But I just got to ask you, how could we have ever stopped them? Because who could have ever predicted their secret plan, which was to run the quarterback up the middle every play? It's not fair to our defense that they should have had to figure out how to stop the incredibly diverse offense of running the quarterback up the middle every play. What team in America could have stopped a quarterback running up the middle every play? He had 28 carries for 195 yards, seven-yard average, and two touchdowns. I mean, how many times does a quarterback not named Cam Newton get 195 yards rushing on 28 carries against a defense like ours?
I mean, you heard me last week come on here and say I felt great about the defense, and I was sick watching that.
Yeah.
There were a couple things going on. One is we were trying, again, guys getting a little bit out of position, you know, covering the wrong gap because they were all trying to make a play. But also, I'm going to give a little bit of credit to their offensive coaches at Mississippi State. They were doing a few of the things that we did in 2013. It literally was the exact same plays that we ran sometimes in 2013 where we changed up Nick Marshall and Trey Mason and kind of where they came together and running inside versus who went inside, who went outside, or where the mesh point was and that kind of stuff. And they literally changed it up from their previous games. And they did the same thing that we used to do with Trey Mason where they line him up a wide receiver and they bring him in at the last second into the tailback spot. And a lot of times, like, we would be in position – But our guys would be like, we're just one gap over, and the quarterback would run through the empty gap every time. And it was just because these little slight tweaks that they made to their offense. We did a poor job adjusting and being prepared for that on defense. And I think our guys, again, I think because the offense has been struggling, the defense went in with the mentality of we got to shut them out. We got to hold them to 6 or 7 points. We can't let them do anything. And I think when you do that, you don't just like, hey, let's play our game and we'll be fine. I'm going to stay in my spot and play our game. Everybody's kind of pressing, thinking we got to get a negative play every time. And you end up with that kind of stuff. And then they kind of got us on our heels. And then once they got going, then the time of possession thing ate our lunch. And I think the defense was exhausted.
Yeah.
I mean, in the first half, we had the ball 4 times. We had one drive where we kept the ball for 4 minutes, our longest drive of the game, and our other drives were all like 1 minute. Yeah. That's it. So we had like, whatever, 7-8 minutes of time of possession in the first half. And then we had that huge sequence when he fumbled the punt and they recovered the ball. So it's basically like the defense was on the field a long time. Mm-hmm. We succeeded. We stopped them. And then we fumble the punt and they get the ball again. And then they, you know, grind us out for another 5 or 6 minutes. And then they got the ball to start the second half. So that was a huge point in the game where they just laid on our defense and wore them out. And I think they were really just gassed after that. But I think, you know, so that part was very frustrating.
41-53 possession for them, 18-07 for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
I mean, there's two things there. One is, again, like we talked about, we gave them the ball back on turnovers. And then we're trying to go faster on offense. We were trying to go quicker. And this is so those two things combined kind of bites you in the rear end.
They did the thing like we were talking about where when Tuberville did to Spurrier, where we kept the ball the entire third quarter. They didn't have the ball the entire third quarter, but if you went back to that drive halfway through
the second quarter,
they had it more than a quarter. Because you know, people were pointing out like more than halfway through the third quarter, and people on Twitter were pointing out that our last possession, the last time Stidham had the ball in his hands, halfway through the third quarter, was the overthrow of Slayton like 5 minutes into the second quarter.
And it was like an hour of real time.
Yes, that our offense never
got the ball again.
That's right.
And it's tough to get in sync when you go an hour between touching the ball.
Yes. That up too.
Yeah. But again, like, so the special teams have been good, but that punt, the fumble punt was gigantic there because it really undermined the defense after they had done their job.
Well, and that was a weird thing too because he dropped a punt earlier. The ever reliable Ryan Davis dropped a punt but recovered it. I was thinking,
and was lucky to get it back.
Lucky to get it back. Like, did they use the ball that's been scuffed to death and had no surface on it left? You know, to punt, that wouldn't be a bad idea. And then I kept starting worrying about that. Like, do teams like take the ball that's got been rubbed flat and they use that as the punting ball? That way, you know, it's not a bad idea.
I don't know if it's the lights in that stadium or what, but on the fun one where he dropped, it was more about. The blockers were too close to him.
Yeah, the one he fumbled, that was it.
Pushed back in him.
That was it. I was going to say, the one where we actually turned the ball over, it was because there was like a little scrum of like three people that got pushed back into him, and our guy was doing the pushing.
Yeah.
So that was weird that we actually had a blocker pushing their guy backwards into our kick return guy.
And then even then, Ryan Davis was basically laying on top of the ball and couldn't see it. And by the time he saw it, the other team's guy had recovered it.
Yeah, it was right under him and he didn't see it. That was, oh boy. Well, like I say, the coin flip kept coming up bad. And what galls me too, do you realize this? In our last 7 games against Mississippi State, we are now 3-4.
Oh, good golly.
We played Florida State 7 times in the 80s through 1990. Florida State, okay, we played them in Auburn, we played them in Tallahassee, we played them in New Orleans. And in those 7 games against Florida State, our record was 4-3. And in the last 7 years against Mississippi State, we are 3-4. That's and by the way, if you go back to the one that was 8 years ago, let's see, we 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, yeah. The one that was 8 years ago was 2011. That's the one where we tackled them on the goal line on the last play, or we would have lost. If you go back 2010, it was with Cam, it was 17-14.
That was a close game.
So I mean, we are an inch away from being 3-6 in the last 9 against them. That's just mind-blowing to me.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. All right, well, let's lay Mississippi State to rest. We want to talk a little bit about Tennessee. I'll let you throw out what you know about them. We also have an interview coming up with a friend of mine who's a Tennessee guy, Tom Morris. And we'll either put that on here in this segment, or depending on how it goes, or we'll hold it over for a special episode maybe on Wednesday of this week, just depending on how it goes. So we'll just see. I'll call an audible at the last minute on that. We'll see how it goes. But in any case, what do we know about Tennessee? Obviously, they've got Pruitt. How have they looked this year so far, and what is your thinking right now?
Well, my thinking up until Saturday night was that we were going to kick Tennessee around the stadium.
Yeah.
They're not very good. They're at the beginning of a huge rebuilding process. And Pruitt has his hands full. I mean, they've beaten two bad teams and lost to good teams. They've lost to Florida, Georgia, West Virginia. And in the Georgia game, they hung around for a while in Athens. I think, they play harder than they did last year when the whole coaching search thing, the coach, obviously was going to get released and the team was kind of falling apart. But they don't have a ton of talent. They don't have a ton of, difference makers at an SEC level, guys who, you're like, oh, we got to really watch out game plan for that guy. I think in particular, they're not great on offense. Guantanamo is the quarterback, and he's okay. But I think you think Tennessee, you think they're going to have great wide receivers. Maybe they have some great guys in the secondary or defensive linemen, but I think they're pretty below average in the SEC in all of those categories now. So I feel like we ought to be in a good position to come home. And if we don't let the Mississippi State loss hang over us, we ought to be able to come out there and move the ball up and down the field on them pretty well. Their defense is like 100th in the country in most even advanced stat rankings. So we ought, in the big picture, we have, Tennessee, Ole Miss, and their defense is terrible, and we have a bye week. So, that's what we got before A&M. So I feel like we play two bad defenses in a bye week. We ought to be able to do some things to, duct tape the offense into semi-coherence by the time we play A&M.
Well, let's see. It's in Auburn, right? So
yes, the danger is it's the dreaded 11 a.m. Central kickoff.
Oh gosh!
After a road game we lost, will fans be there? Will they be there, early and excited, or all that? Or they be kind of be sitting on their hands waiting for the team to do something, and the team's kind of, out of it, not at peak intensity after losing a road game, knowing that they're probably better than Tennessee. So that's the dangerous part for us. So Tennessee probably looks at it like, hey, we have a real shot in this game we didn't before. We have a chance to get an SEC win. We need to go in there and
road win.
Attack from the opening bell.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it's funny, too, by the way. I was going to tell you that we lamented that we did our show the week after the LSU loss. But that weekend is looking better and better in the rearview mirror. I'm glad because this was one of our options this weekend, and I'm so glad that we didn't go with it. Because can you imagine going down and trying to get up excitement to do our video live show this coming Saturday? Oh, God. And I mean, at least, the game went pretty well that we were at, and we'd only lost one game at that point, and people were still, fairly excited. It had dropped off a bit. But I'm just glad Archon coming up in St. Louis was the reason I couldn't do this weekend, and I'm very grateful for Archon at this point. And if it had been like the A&M game, I don't even want to think about. So I think it worked out that we did it when we did, and we should probably bear that in mind for next season if we do it again, to try earlier in the season just in case, Mm-hmm. Okay, so like I said, you may be hearing our extended Tennessee preview here, or maybe not. I guess we should thank our patrons. You guys that keep us on the air in the good times and the bad, and let us celebrate with you when things go well, and try to make some sense out of it all and kind of calm everybody down and talk ourselves and each other and the rest of you off the ledge, you know, when it gets really frustrating. If you want to be part of that group, John, we have the power poll coming up. We forgot to do the power poll last week, and apologies to our patrons that participated in it, but we'll get it in this time. And we have other things going forward, of course, that you can participate in. They're on the webpage. If you go to www.auwishbone.com, you click on the Become a Patron. It doesn't automatically make you one. You click on there, and then you can read about it. You can kind of see what all it entails and all that. But it's as little as $1 a month to help us keep our show on the air. We really got to thank Brennan O'Dwyer for what he has done for us this year. Just awesome assistance that he's given us. And then Christopher Burleson, Joseph Fine, and Brandon Sisson, Phil Amthor, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. Let me pause for a second and hit my has our background music for this. There we go. Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Auburn Tiger Talk, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, David Hegler, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Matt Robbenheimer, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Michael Kirshner, Dave Powell, Ronald McCullum, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Joshua Corbett, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medina, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our one-time donors, including the awesome Surfer Chickify. All right, there are our most up-to-date list of patrons, so we appreciate that. And again, go to www.auwishbone.com to join that list and participate with us and be part of the AU Wishbone family. All right, let's see. What do we have next? This is where we have Jared's superhero audio clip every week.
Hello, Van and John and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist from the Long Box Crusade, here with your Auburn University superhero battles for the week. This week, Auburn University took on Mississippi State. Auburn University looked a bit like Wolverine, and Mississippi State looked like the Punisher. Shouldn't Wolverine be able to beat the Punisher, you say? Well, probably, but here's the problem. First, let me start with a spoiler alert, because if you haven't seen Logan, you kind of need to, because our Wolverine was like Logan at the end of Logan, when he's just kind of lashing out and his powers are failing him, and especially his defensive powers just can't keep up with his lack of offense. Meanwhile, Mississippi State came in there looking like the Punisher, a prepared Punisher, gritty, determined, with a plan. And unfortunately, our old man Logan just rolled over and died. It's not my happiest superhero battle. I want to say something uplifting. Wolverine's still pretty cool. Anyway, this has been Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, with your Auburn Superhero Battles. Back to you, Van and John, and my buddy Pat Sampson, who does some of this editing work. Go ahead and find our eagle and let him weigh in on this. War Eagle.
All right, and I think now, that'll help me find it later. I think now I hit this button here.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. I'm sure we got a couple, even though we're early.
Oh, yes. Our listeners have thoughts.
Oh, boy.
All right. First, questions from Jonathan Harris at AU Zoom. How in the world do you guys have any to go back and watch a game like this again? Do you buy a new TV frequently after throwing something through the current one?
That was my question when you said you watched it again. I deleted it, so good for you, I guess.
I'm not a sadist or anything. I just sometimes I like in the, and we've talked about this in the moment, I'm too emotional to really look at it and see and understand what happens.
Right. Exactly.
So I need to go back and I need to understand.
You put your analyst glasses on. You know, the ancient Spartans, to test their young, would, you know, make them go out in the wilderness with just a spear to kill a wolf and survive in the wilderness for a week at a time with nothing but berries and stream water, and watch Auburn losses and try to rationalize them. That was one of the things the Spartans used to do to prove your mental toughness.
You got to be mentally tough. Yes. All right, our next question is from David Simpson, who says, did I make a good decision to go see Fleetwood Mac live rather than watch this game?
Yes. Yes, you did.
All right. Our next question is from Emily Rios, who emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And she says, confession, I stopped watching.
Hey.
She says, hi, Van and John. Can we talk about Jared Stidham? The game was atrocious, and after the refs gave State that non-touchdown, my poor Auburn heart couldn't take it anymore. Mm. We followed along on Twitter to lessen the sting.
Yeah.
But one thing seems obvious no matter how we followed it. Iron Bowl Jarrett has become the anomaly, not the other way around. He's just off, regardless of whether he has 2 seconds in the backfield or enough time to make a sandwich. Yep. At this point, what are the merits of keeping him in the game? He isn't really a run threat, and now he can't pass. Is it worth giving Malik a shot? I know he hasn't looked amazing either.
There it is.
I never want to question the dedication of a player, but it seems like a shakeup of some kind is in order. Thanks, War Eagle, Emily Rios. And then after we answer the Jared question, she has a PS that I'm going to read. So,
well, the question to me is – we got a little echo. The question to me is, what will it do to Malik Willis to put him out there in this situation with the offensive line, quote unquote, playing the way it is right now? I mean, could we ruin, quote unquote, ruin two quarterbacks this season rather than one?
Well, but I think when you're looking for things to spark the offense, again, having a quarterback that can run and having those plays in the playbook open up things that aren't there. I mean, we saw this a lot in 2013 and 14. When the quarterback can run, the defense has to play you differently, just as we saw with our defense last weekend. And when the quarterback can't run or won't run, then it's much easier for the defense.
Yeah, well, you know, give it a try. I did see people complaining about – they said, well, what about Joey Gatewood? And they're like, well, he's not ready, he's going to redshirt. And it's people are saying, oh, he's privately – they say he's terrible. Well, then why did we recruit him? Oh, Gus is horrible. I'm like, no. I mean, they recruited him, A, because he has potential down the road to be a great quarterback, and B, if he doesn't, they're saying he could be an NFL tight end. So you want him on your team if you can recruit him. That's not an issue. It's just what you do with him and what he can do, what he proves able to do, you know.
I agree. Like, I mean, Gatewood was a project recruit, basically. He has, like you're saying, potential is the right word.
Yeah.
And I think down the road, you know, he may turn into a really good quarterback, or he may move to another position and be really good there. But he's an SEC-level athlete and player.
Right.
I think if we were going to change quarterback, it's definitely Willis. I mean, he came in this game, you know, and for two plays. And, you know, one play he handed it off, and the next play he ran it and didn't get anywhere. So he has not looked great.
It's been a while since he's had a big play.
Yeah. And, I mean, there was that point where he came in and was really effective, but since then,
no.
So I'm not holding my breath that he – and I think – I mean, again, the crazy thing to me is the strength of the offense is the receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And Stidham, even as bad as he is a better passer than Malik Willis. So absolutely. I think you've got to keep playing him.
Absolutely.
Her PS is, speaking of shakeups, at the Shutdown Fullcast Live podcast, Stephen Godfrey told me that Gus hiring Hugh Freeze to replace Chip Lindsey was a real possibility.
Yes.
And she said, ugh.
No, I'm down completely. I understand. I mean, I totally get the issues, but he's not the Baylor dude, you know? On a scale of transgressions, he's, I guess, kind of Petrino-ish, but... or not quite, somewhere in there, but he's not Baylor guy.
He's not there, but he's also a gigantic flaming hypocrite.
Well, sure. I mean, and there's no doubt. But they're buddies, right? We've talked about this before. Yeah. They're really close. And it's, you know, one of those. And Saban would do it in a heartbeat. And nobody would bat an eyelash. Isn't that true?
Well, yes. But what we should have done and probably what we may still do is bring him in as an analyst and then let him do the analyst thing and then replace Chip later. And I think that scenario is a possibility.
Well, and here's the question too. Do you bring in Chip Lindsey and then everybody claims, oh, it's still Gus running the offense, and then fire Chip Lindsey? I mean, if it's not even Chip Lindsey, then how do you blame him? I mean, you got to pick one. Either Chip Lindsey is running the offense and it's bad, or he's not running the offense, in which case, how do you blame him? And as you have said, it's not really the offense so much as execution in the offensive line.
I mean, but I think there are things on the offense that they could change that the coaches are accountable for. I mean, again, playing Cam Martin is a choice.
Yes.
Playing him ahead of Whitlow or anybody else is a choice. And I think also we all know this, like, I don't understand why their only two options in our passing game are the screen and 50 yards down the field. Like, there are a lot of short intermediate passing routes and throughout football that work and that Stidham and these receivers could execute. And I do not understand why we are not consistently going to those.
Well, I would be very happy with Hugh Freeze. I'll tell you right now, I'm willing to take whatever, again, if we can hire, if Alabama can hire the parade of misfit toys that they've hired, then why can't we bring in a guy that's tight with this, so tight with Gus, that's a, you know, it's a passing game guru, works, he's, you know, great with receivers, and we've got the receivers right now. While we've got them, for crying out loud, let's, you know, that's fine with me. I'm down.
It's a tough one. I mean, I don't think he's a very good human being, but I get it. So our next question comes from Tom Anderson, who says, it's a bad season when we lose to Mississippi State.
Yeah.
We did cut the penalties, and we didn't get scorched in the secondary, but our strongest unit, the front seven, got gashed. Apparently, Cam Martin's success in the last half was short-lived. Whitlow's production was encouraging, but we still ran less than 100 yards for the third straight week.
Wow. Yeah.
And suddenly Stidham's the most inaccurate passers in the league. The players cannot all be suddenly inferior at once. It must be something else. Are we not taking our competition seriously? Are we not taking anything seriously? War Eagle.
Yeah, it's a checkered history of years we lose to Mississippi State. I mean, I've always said that's kind of the barometer of how the season's going to go. There have been very few years. There have been some. Like 1997, we lost two games the whole year in the regular season. One of them was a shutout at home to Mississippi State. That was the game where I drove from Atlanta to Auburn, had a flat tire on 285, got to Auburn into the second quarter, got a ticket handed to me for free, went inside and watched us get shut out by
that sounds like a wonderful day.
Oh God. By the coach that wore no socks, remember?
Joe Lee Dunn,
yes. Oh my gosh. So that was rough. That was
sockless.
Sockless wonder. That was one of two games. We lost to Florida at home and we lost to Mississippi State. So there have been years where Mississippi State losing to them wasn't like, you know, we're gonna go 5-6 or 5-7. But more often than not, by far, losing to Mississippi State means you're probably gonna lose to LSU, you're probably gonna lose to Alabama, you're probably gonna lose to Georgia. Not many years did we beat Mississippi State, I mean lose to them and beat everybody else. Just maybe 97, and I guess there's maybe one or two other years. So I guess 14 is an example, although we lost everybody that, you know, lost to quite a few.
All right, next question from Chris Thrash, and this is for Coach Snyder.
Oh, all right. Well, I can dust him out of the – let's see. Okay. Okay, there he is. Hey, Coach, come over here. Go ahead.
Dearest Coach, I couldn't help but notice your Wildcats have had a rough stretch losing to Baylor this past Saturday. I hope this does not influence any retirement plans. Don't listen to anyone. The game has not passed you by. Perhaps you can borrow one of my Hawaiian quarterbacks. Sincerely, Coach Saban.
Well, I appreciate your concerns, but honestly, my players have been extremely distracted this season with the war between the states happening. We know about Bleeding Kansas. We've been having Bleeding Kansas State this year. It hasn't been pleasant. I know that young whippersnapper, Coach Saban, as he and I once said to Congressman Lincoln, things will get better tomorrow. It'll be a new day. So hang in there. Hold tight. The covered wagons are frozen in the pass, but the cavalry will be along soon. It'll all be better tomorrow. Goodbye. Well, I guess they are concerned. I mean, they've got they've signed him to this new multi. When you sign a 97-year-old coach to a multi-year deal, and then things start going bad, that does make you start to wonder a little bit, doesn't it?
Well, and I think I see where this is going. He wants his son to succeed him.
Yeah.
He is going to try to do the thing where he rallies them through this season, and then he coaches in the offseason, and then he retires at the last minute, you know, like right before the season next year or the year after that. So they have to put his son in as interim coach and give him a shot. Or he's going to try to force them to, you know, make his son the coach when he retires. That's his game plan as much as anything now.
And my son deserves a try, even though his tender age of 73. He's only 73 years old, for crying out loud. Give the man a shot. He had
and again,
he had an important addendum.
And I want to point out that we're doing these jokes about Coach Snyder, and he is the only Power 5 coach older than Nick Saban.
Older than Nick Saban. That's why I throw in that. Well, excuse me. That's why the coach throws in the bit about he and Coach Saban were talking to Congressman Lincoln, because they're both of that age. Yeah. They're of a generation.
They are.
Yes.
All right. Next question comes from Gary Baird, and it's just something we were just talking about. Who will replace Chip Lindsey at the end of the season? No way he survives
until
next season. Seems like Malzahn will use this as a Tuberville situation, fire coordinators to protect himself, which is the – you know, we saw that with the Tuberville model.
Tubbs was the master of pitching. He was like Nixon pitching H.R. Haldeman and Ehrlichman over the side of the boat. Heck yeah. He was very good at that. We covered that. So,
all right. Next question is from Steven at Steven AUNI. And he has a long question, but it comes down to what we talked about a second ago, which is, when watching Mississippi State successfully run the read option of the quarterback that can't pass, I couldn't help but wondering how good Auburn would have been doing the same thing with Willis. I'm sure Auburn would have run all over Mississippi State using the same tactic in the Willis booby option combo. Please discuss.
I just don't know that our backs are playing that well right now.
I think Whitlow is. Again, he averaged 11 yards a carry in this game, and he was really good on the outside running the ball. Yeah. I think we stop playing Cam Martin, play Whitlow, give him the carries, and then any extra carries that are left over go to Shivers, Race, and Martin. And I think Whitlow with 20 carries per game, if he could handle that physically right now, would be a gigantic upgrade for this offense. Mm-hmm. All right. Next question comes from Josh Dubb on Twitter, who says, if someone kicked in your front door, held the gun to your head, and ordered you to truthfully find a positive thought about the MSU game, what would that thought be?
That happens all the time, doesn't it? At least in Alabama. I don't know if it happens up here in Illinois. Finds a happy thought about that game.
A positive thought.
My positive thought about that game was that it's not the game we did our live show from.
My positive thought is that the team did not give up, even though, like you were saying, all the things kept going against them.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
This is the thing that's insane. It's like they kept fighting and kept fighting and kept fighting, and we were in a position to win the game in the fourth quarter. You know, like Whitlow went across the goal line, I thought we were going to win at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, then things continued to not go our way, and they blocked the field goal. That was gigantic. So that was it for me. Like, people want to say, like, oh, you know, this team – Is it trying and all that kind of stuff? Like, that was a team where every single thing was going the other way. And they did not give up. They kept coming and kept coming and kept trying down to the bitter end of the game.
I think we got time for maybe one more question, and then we got to get rolling.
All right. This is from Ryan Brown.
Okay.
On the AE Wishbone, and he says, hey guys, AE Wishbone is one of my favorite podcasts. I've got a listener question for you. He says, whose football team do you think has evolved as the identity scheme more over the last 6 years, Malzahn or Saban? He says, I would argue it's Saban. Granted, it's easier for him to do so with unlimited resources and talent, but when we hired Gus as head coach, I would have assumed he would be more agile, creative, yes, ingenuity-driven coach.
Oh, absolutely. We've talked about it, too, that, I mean, it seems like Gus just kind of went in his box. He's not – we've been less creative, it seems like, every year. And then sometimes when he does go back and do creative things, at this point it smacks of desperation, where it used to smack of creativity. I totally agree. And I never thought I would have said that. I mean, Saban protested the 21st century right up until he embraced it and brought in all these gurus. Whereas Gus seemed like the 22nd century right up until we started running 1975 football. And it's just strange.
It is 100% strange. And I think, I wonder, like, we had so much success in 2013, 2010 doing very specific kind of things.
Yeah.
And I wonder sometimes if it's like, it's easy to fall back on, I've seen this work, must do that. But you have to give Saban credit for this. Like, their offense has evolved and their defense has evolved over the last 10 years dramatically as the league has changed and they've taken advantage of the trends and changes. And again, they have gone offensively where we needed to go this year, which was wide open passing game. Their running backs don't touch the ball that much. They don't get a lot of carries. In the last three years, they were running kind of this, the Clemson, kind of offense.
Yeah.
And a little bit of the balls on offense with Hurts. And they've abandoned that completely and gone to this spread passing game. And we haven't done that. We're still trying to have like one foot in one thing and one foot over here.
That's it. What's our power poll this week?
Well, here's the AE Wishbone power poll with the patrons. Basically, the bottom tier of the SEC, not a shock, Arkansas, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. Then there's kind of a lower tier with Missouri and Ole Miss. And there's kind of a big pile in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina, Kentucky, Florida, Auburn, A&M, Mississippi State, kind of all in the middle.
I don't know if we beat any of those teams we're in that group with right now. Mm-hmm. I think Kentucky would beat our brains in right now.
And then Bama and Georgia at the top by themselves, and then kind of LSU a tier below them, kind of by themselves above the middle tier.
Yeah, yeah. What about Florida?
I think they're solid. I mean, I think, again, they're doing some good stuff. I think Mullen's a good coach, and he's gotten them playing better. They have good talent on defense, Mullen's done a good job of their quarterback.
Yeah. So Alabama destroyed Arkansas, but Arkansas did score 31 points, which is like four touchdowns more than they scored on us, which is, I guess we should. And those were legit. That wasn't garbage time. That was like during the first, second, third quarter. So that's interesting. You had the weird South Carolina-Missouri game with a storm, and oh, how awful that game had a storm delay with like a minute and a half to go, and you're just like, God, just drag out the agony. But yeah, 37-35, that was something. But yeah, Florida beating LSU, I mean, that really was the one that really surprised me, I think, the most. I guess it shouldn't have given the series, but didn't you, I mean, I...
I thought LSU would win, but I wasn't sure. And I think, it was kind of a back and forth game. But Florida just made plays going down the stretch in that game.
And I was very surprised that Texas A&M beat Kentucky. I mean, I know that they played Clemson hard, but Kentucky looked so good lately. That just surprised me.
I think Texas A&M has a huge home field advantage. That's a tough place to go and play. And I think Kentucky had played a couple of huge games in a row. And I think the other thing that was dumb is, like, Kentucky has, their best player, and they did not give him the ball in overtime when the game was on the line. I thought that was a real kind of being outthinking themselves.
Yeah. Georgia looks like Georgia against Vanderbilt. Ole Miss put up 70 on Louisiana Monroe. So I am starting to get a little worried about that game because I know we can score 70 on them. I'm afraid they can score 71 on us. We'll see. Any thoughts about last week's games other than that?
I mean, other than the watching Missouri and South Carolina play in the monsoon was kind of entertaining. Before the weather delay, when they were sliding around the field and,
yeah,
you know, Muschamp standing there in a soaking wet screaming. And
let's see. Coming up next week, Florida-Vanderbilt. That should be an easy win for Florida, the way it's going right now. Georgia at LSU. Now, Georgia should win that by double digits, but it's at LSU, which is a house of horrors, as we all know. So LSU has a drunken – they don't have a puncher's chance. They have a drunk guy in an alley with a broken bottle chance. That's how
Which, again, you don't want any part of that guy.
No. He smells of corn dogs, and he has a broken liquor bottle in one hand, and you just really want to stay away. Well,
but let's – in the big picture of the last 2 years with Georgia, let's review their really tough road games they played. You know, at Auburn where they lost. Where the other – I mean, the SEC East was dog crap last year. This year – you know, I think they played at Missouri, or was it Missouri at home? I mean, you know, so I mean, how many other tough road games have they played? Mm-hmm. So I think this is, in that sense, it's going to be tough, and I think it'll be interesting to see how they respond.
I agree. Texas A&M at South Carolina. Texas A&M continues their tour of interesting teams they're playing. They played Clemson. They played Kentucky. And now they're playing South Carolina. So it's really weird, the teams they're playing this year seem like not teams they normally play. But South Carolina's got a shot in that game, I think. I mean, Kentucky and South Carolina are fairly even and slight edge to Kentucky. But it's at South Carolina, so that could be interesting. And then Missouri goes to Alabama to be destroyed. That won't be pretty. And then Ole Miss at Arkansas. I imagine that Arkansas will score more than 28 points, and I imagine Ole Miss will score more than 40 points.
This is the battle for seventh.
That's like when I watch Formula One and like the top five drivers are all just running off and it's not even interesting. And so, you know, Sky or ESPN or whoever will put up a graphic, like they'll show two cars like close together and they'll say the battle for 14th. And that's kind of what this is. This is the
100%.
This is the Stoffel Van Dorn versus Pierre Gasly, you know, Toro Rosso battle for 14th here. Ole Miss at Arkansas. But I think Ole Miss probably will win that game just because while they both are hot garbage, at least Ole Miss can score points.
Yep.
All right. I think that's going to do it for this week. I'm probably going to put the Tennessee preview in as a separate show now. We'll record that tonight. So look for that in your podcast feed a couple of days from when you're listening to this. And we'll have some fun looking
Thanks
back
for
at Tennessee
listening
in
to
the past,
Wishbone
Tennessee
podcast.
This year
All past
versus
episodes
Auburn,
are available
that rivalry that used to be and has kind of gone away. But it's always nice to play the big orange.
For more
so.
Auburn fun, join us on Facebook
any last
at
thoughts?
facebook.com/AUWishbone. And follow
out,
the show on Twitter at AUWishbone.
Positive or things. Hey, we threw the ball to the tight end a couple of times.
I didn't know who he was. I'd never heard of him. But hey, like, who is that guy? Like, did we
threw the ball to tight end multiple times in this game.
Yeah, but it was a guy I'd never even seen on the roster before. I'm thinking, did we pull a guy out of high school or something and just slap a jersey on him and put a Groucho Marx, you know, glasses and mustache on him or something? I don't know. Oh, well. All right. Well, that's our bright spot, I guess. Okie dokie. Well, our time is up. We thank you for your Royal John.
Royal, man.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.
Go to bed.